Welcome to The Brand Advantage. This series, brought to you by Bluetex, explores how brand creates real competitive leverage by increasing enterprise visibility, strengthening credibility, and ultimately raising enterprise value. Each episode distills proven strategic thinking from the Bluetex perspective into focused, practical insight, designed to be consumed, not pitched. Strong brands create advantage long before the deal. Now let's jump into another episode of The Brand Advantage.
You know, I was looking at the industry spend numbers this morning. I mean, we are seeing absolute billions pouring into the cybersecurity market. It's a gold rush.
It's a total gold rush.
But then you look at the other side of it and you see that marketing leaders in this specific space, they have one of the highest burnout rates in all of B2B.
It's a grinder.
It really is. And it makes you wonder, you know, if demand is at an all-time high and budgets are getting bigger, why is it so incredibly hard to market these products?
Mm-hmm.
Why does the standard B2B playbook just sort of implode when you apply it to cyber?
That is the billion-dollar question.
Yeah.
And frankly, a lot of companies are failing to answer it.
Which brings us perfectly to today's deep dive. We are digging into this really sharp article from Bluetex. It's called Marketing Challenges in Cybersecurity and How to Overcome Them by Eddie Bridgewater.
Right. It just came out mid-January 2026.
Exactly. And the whole idea here isn't just, oh, marketing is hard. It's that marketing safety to professional skeptics is like a fundamental paradox.
Right. Because you're trying to sell trust in an environment that's literally defined by zero trust.
Exactly. So let's set the stage. The article argues that cybersecurity sits at this brutal intersection of technical complexity and existential business risk. But is it really that different from selling, say, complex cloud infrastructure?
I think it is, and here's why. If your cloud infrastructure goes down, it's a really bad day. You lose money.
Sure.
If your cybersecurity fails, your company might actually cease to exist.
Yeah.
You're on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, your CEO is testifying before Congress, and your customers are suing you. The emotional weight of that purchase is just completely different.
So the stakes themselves create a different kind of buyer psychology.
100%. You aren't just selling a tool,
yeah.
You're selling sleep at night. You're selling the absence of a disaster.
Mm.
And the article points out that because the market is so lucrative, it's become incredibly crowded.
Crowded feels like a very polite way to put it. It's more like a mosh pit.
Mm. It is. You have thousands of vendors.
Yeah.
And because the barrier to entry for, you know, coding a security tool is lower than building a car, you have new startups popping up every single week. This creates a deafening amount of noise.
And the article mentions that this noise leads to skepticism. But let's be real, security pros are paid to be skeptical, aren't they? It's in the job description.
It is, but it's more than that. It's what they call vendor fatigue. Imagine you're a CSO. You are getting hundreds of emails a week, and they all say the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah. We offer complete visibility.
We have military-grade encryption. We use AI to stop threats.
I get those emails, and I'm not even a CSO. It creates this boy who cried wolf dynamic.
Exactly. So when a vendor actually does have something revolutionary, the buyer's default setting is just, yeah, right, prove it.
Okay.
And that brings us to the first major hurdle that Bridgewater identifies in the text, the complexity trap.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I feel like this is where marketing teams and engineering teams usually get into a fist fight. The article talks about this obsession with features. It's the classic startup trap. You have a brilliant technical founder. They've built something amazing, maybe a new way to sandbag an API against DDoS attacks.
Right.
And they are so proud of the architecture that they want the marketing to basically be a blueprint of it.
Right. They want to just list all the specs. Look at our proprietary distinct heuristic analysis engine.
And that's where they lose the entire room.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second. If I'm selling to a really technical practitioner, don't they want to know about the heuristic engine?
Yeah.
If I just say, we stop bad stuff, aren't I just insulting their intelligence?
That is the tension. You absolutely can't be fluffy. But here's the nuance the article gets at. There's a big difference between technical accuracy and technical messaging.
Ooh.
If you lead with the heuristic engine, you're asking the buyer to do all the mental math.
Yeah.
You're asking them to figure out why that engine even matters.
So you're making them do the work. Exactly. And they're way too busy to do your work for you. Let's do a quick role play. Pitch me that heuristic engine again, the way a typical engineer would want it marketed.
Okay. Clears throat. Our platform utilizes a patent-pending kernel-level heuristic driver that intercepts system calls with less than 2% latency overhead to identify non-signature-based anomalies.
Okay, I'm asleep. Or I'm already arguing with you in my head about whether 2% latency is actually any good. I'm down in the weeds.
Right.
Now, flip that. Give me what the article calls strategic messaging, outcome-based.
All right. How about we stop ransomware encryption before it starts without slowing down your developers' machines?
Boom. Now I'm listening. You've told me the outcome stopping ransomware, and you've already addressed my biggest fear, slowing down the devs.
But did we lose the kernel-level detail?
You put that on the data sheet. You don't put it on the billboard. The article really emphasizes that strategic messaging isn't about dumbing it down.
Mm.
It's about translating architecture into relevance.
That's a key distinction. Translating, not diluting.
Right. Because you have different audiences. The security leader, they care about risk reduction and compliance. The executive cares about business continuity. Neither of them wakes up in the morning excited about system call interception.
They wake up worried about being breached.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stay in that complexity trap, you might win a debate on Reddit, but you lose the contract.
Right.
And that leads directly into the second hurdle, which is arguably the most damaging one, the trust deficit.
The article hits this so hard. It says credibility isn't optional, it's the foundation. But isn't that true for all sales? I mean, I need to trust the guy selling me a used car, too.
True. But if the used car breaks down, you're late to work. If your security vendor lies to you, or fails, or turns out to be vaporware, you are exposing your entire organization to catastrophic liability.
That's a good point.
And, you know, we have to acknowledge the history of this industry.
You mean the FUD era?
The FUD era. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. For 20 years, security marketing was basically, the hackers are coming. You're going to lose everything. Buy our box or you're doomed.
Just total scare tactics.
And it worked for a while. But now, buyers are completely immune to it. In fact, it actively destroys trust. If you come in screaming about the apocalypse, you just look like a snake oil salesman.
So if you can't use fear and you can't just brag about your specs, how do you build that trust? Especially if you're a newer player without a 20-year track record.
The article points to thought leadership. And I know that is a buzzword that makes everyone roll their eyes.
It does. It usually just means we wrote a blog post that says nothing.
Right. But in cyber, real thought leadership is different. It's about education. It's about showing the buyer that you understand the threat landscape, maybe even better than they do.
Okay, give me an example. What does good look like here?
Good looks like dissecting a new attack vector.
Mm.
Maybe a new type of supply chain vulnerability. And explaining how it works and how to mitigate it without pitching your product in the first paragraph.
So you're giving away value first. You're acting like a consultant before you're a vendor.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You are demonstrating competence. You're saying, we see what you see. We get it. That builds a huge psychological bridge.
Mm.
The other pillar the article mentions is consistency.
Like visual identity and tone of voice?
Yes. And I know this sounds superficial, but insecurity, it really matters. If your website looks like it was built on a template from 2015, or your logo looks amateurish, the immediate subconscious assumption is
their code is probably messy too.
Yes. If they cut corners on the font, they cut corners on the encryption.
It's unfair, but it's human nature, isn't it?
It is. In a high-stakes market, polish equals professionalism, and professionalism implies safety. The article also mentions validation, you know, analyst reports, customer badges, that social proof.
Which is huge. Nobody wants to be the first person to test a firewall.
You want to know that three other banks are using it first.
Okay, so we've got complexity and trust. Now we sail into the sea of sameness. This is the third challenge. And honestly, this is the one that frustrates me the most as an observer. Why do all these companies sound exactly identical?
It's the homogenization of language. The source notes that everyone claims the same holy trinity, visibility, protection, and intelligence.
It's like a game of bingo.
It is. And the reason is fear. Marketing teams look at the market leader, let's say Palo Alto Networks or CrowdStrike, and they say, well, they say complete visibility, so we have to say that too. Or we'll look like we don't have it.
So this defensive marketing, you're just copying the big dogs because you're afraid to be different.
Exactly. Okay. But the result is that any feature-based differentiation just collapses. If everyone claims to catch 99.9% of threats, then 99.9% is just table stakes. It's not a differentiator anymore.
So how do you break out? The article talks about strategic positioning, but that sounds like hard work.
It is hard work because it requires sacrifice. To really position yourself, you have to be willing to say who you are not for.
Oof. That is terrifying for a sales VP. Right? You want me to tell potential customers to go away?
If you want to cut through the noise, yes.
Huh.
You can't be the best security for everyone. You have to be the best API security for fintechs that are utilizing AWS.
Wow, that is specific.
And because it's specific, it resonates. If I'm a fintech CISO on AWS and I see that, I stop scrolling. I think, oh, they built this for me.
But the fear is, what about the healthcare clients? What about manufacturing? We're leaving money on the table.
But are you? Or are you just chasing leads that will never convert because you look too generic?
Yeah.
The expert view here is pretty clear. In a crowded market, generalists die and specialists thrive.
So you align sales and marketing around a very specific target.
Right. It forces discipline. It stops the marketing team from just throwing spaghetti at the wall.
Which brings us to the target itself. Or I guess I should say targets, plural. Because challenge number four is the multi-headed buyer.
Oh, this is where deals go to die.
The committee.
The committee. In enterprise cyber, you are never selling to one person.
Mm.
You have the CISO, the security practitioner, the IT ops leader, the CFO, and maybe even the CEO or the board.
And they all have different priorities.
Not just different, they have conflicting interests. Let's just profile them for a second to see the friction. Take the CISO. What do they want?
They want maximum security, zero risk, lock everything down.
Right. Now look at the IT ops leader, the person keeping the servers running. What do they want?
They want uptime. They don't want a security tool that crashes their servers or blocks legitimate traffic. They basically want you to leave them alone.
Exactly. Conflict number one. Now, bring in the CFO.
Why does this cost $200,000? Do we really need the gold package? Can't we just use the free version?
Conflict number two. And then you have the practitioner, the analyst in the security operations center. They care about usability. Is this dashboard going to make my eyes bleed? Is this going to generate 5,000 false alarms I have to investigate?
So if you write a marketing message that appeals to the CISO, you know, lock everything down, you've just terrified the IT ops guy.
And if you write a message for the CFO, cheapest solution on the market, the CISO immediately thinks you're cheap junk.
It feels like a no-win scenario. How do you solve this multi-headed problem without creating some kind of Frankenstein message?
The article calls for integrated and intentional campaigns. Essentially, you have to layer your messaging. You can't have one landing page for everyone.
So it's about segmentation.
Deep segmentation. You need a technical white paper for the practitioner that totally geeks out on the API. You need a business case calculator for the CFO that talks ROI and liability reduction. And you need a strategic roadmap for the CISO.
They're just different doors into the same room.
Exactly. And your marketing automation has to be smart enough to route the right content to the right person. If you send the CFO a document about packet inspection, they will delete it. If you send the engineer a document about synergy, they will block you.
This sounds incredibly resource intensive, and the article touches on this, metrics. If you're doing all this complex, targeted work, you can't just measure clicks, can you?
No, and this is a huge trap, the lead gen trap. If your bird is just asking for volume of leads, you're set up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
You can get 1,000 leads by giving away a free iPad.
Right.
But none of them will buy $1 million firewall.
So we need to look at what, pipeline influence?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Exactly. Engagement quality. Are the right people at the right accounts reading your content?
Mm-hmm.
Did the CISO from that target bank download the white paper? That one action is worth 500 random clicks.
It's quality over quantity, which circles right back to that trust element again.
It does. It's all connected.
Before we wrap up, I want to touch on one specific point the author makes about agencies, the whole generalist versus specialist debate, because I see this a lot. A cyber company hires a big, fancy Madison Avenue ad agency, and the campaign is beautiful, but totally hollow.
It's the category knowledge gap. If you hire a generalist agency that sells soda and sneakers, they just don't understand the nuance of zero trust.
You spend the first 3 months just explaining what your product even does.
And even then, they might get it wrong. They might use a metaphor that sounds cool to a layperson but sounds ridiculous to a security pro. Our firewall's like a bouncer at a club. No, it's not. That's insulting.
So the argument here is that specialization just accelerates your speed to market.
Yes. A specialized partner already knows the acronyms. They know the regulations, JDPR, CCPA, IFE, PPA. They know the threat landscape. You skip the marketing 101 phase and go straight to strategy.
It makes sense. In a specialized field, you need specialized help.
It prevents those embarrassing missteps that can kill your credibility.
So we've covered a lot of ground here. We've gone from the crowded, noisy market to the complexity trap, the trust deficit, the sea of sameness, and the nightmare of the committee buyer. I mean, it's a gauntlet.
It is. Marketing and cybersecurity is not for the faint of heart.
But if we zoom out, what is the so what here? Why should our listener, who might just be interested in business generally, care about how firewalls are marketed?
I think it touches on something really profound about the digital age. We aren't just talking about selling widgets here. We are talking about the infrastructure of our entire society. Hospitals, banks, power grids, they all run on this code.
And the bad guys are getting faster.
Exponentially faster. AI is helping the attackers just as much as the defenders. So if a cybersecurity company has a brilliant solution that can stop an attack, but they failed to communicate it, that's a tragedy.
It's not just a failed business. It's a vulnerability that stays open.
Exactly. Clear marketing helps the good guys find the right tools faster. Confusion causes delay, and in a breach, delay is fatal. So in a way, good marketing is actually part of the security stack.
That puts a lot of responsibility on the CMO's shoulders.
It does. And it leads me to one final thought, something for you to chew on.
Let's hear it.
We always say code is king. We think the best algorithm always wins. But in a world where the buyer literally cannot understand the complexity of what they are buying, where they have to take a leap of faith, I wonder if the brand is becoming more important than the code.
Explain that.
If I can't audit your source code, I have to audit your reputation. I have to audit how you make me feel. Do I feel safe with you?
So the brand protects the decision.
Exactly. The code protects the data, but the brand protects the decision to buy. And if the marketing fails to build that safety, the best code in the world will just sit on a shelf.
That is a fascinating shift from technical specs to psychological safety.
It's the human element in the machine.
Well, on that note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive into the business of safety. Hopefully the next time you see a cybersecurity ad, you'll look at it a little differently and maybe have a little empathy for the person trying to write it.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us. Stay curious, stay skeptical, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.